Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. In his analysis, The Challenge of Cultural Relativism, James Rachels is going to first set out what he takes to be a central type of argument made by those who espouse and advocate for cultural relativism in whatever form we happen to find it. And he talks first about a sort of very specific argument that gets made, and I'll just run you through the two examples that he has. Here's one. The premise is the Greeks believed it was wrong to eat the dead, whereas the Colossians believed it was right to eat the dead, and the conclusion of that is therefore eating the dead is neither objectively right nor objectively wrong. It is merely a matter of opinion which varies from culture to culture. And he could have framed that as it's merely a matter of cultural norms which vary from culture to culture as well. The next example that he gives in this piece has to do with the Eskimo or Inuit. He says that they saw nothing wrong with infanticide, whereas Americans believe infanticide is immoral. And the conclusion to that would be infanticide is neither objectively right nor objectively wrong. It's merely a matter of opinion which varies from culture to culture. You notice what the key connecting point is there, right? X, whatever cultural practice it happens to be, is neither objectively right nor objectively wrong. It is merely a matter of opinion, or we could say feeling or habit, whatever we want to call it. We could invoke William Graham Summer and the folk ways or anything like that, Ruth Benedict, any of the anthropologists we'd like, and we'd have the same conclusion coming about. We can't say any of this is objectively right or wrong. It's merely something that varies from culture to culture, and for that reason, whatever is going to be right is right only within a particular culture. Now, Rachels generalizes this, as indeed do many cultural relativists, those that he has in his crosshairs in this essay, into a much more wide argument in terms of its scope, where we can say we have a single premise and then we have a conclusion. The premise, different cultures have different moral codes. And then the conclusion, which I've only partially written up here, therefore, there is no objective truth in morality. Right and wrong are only matters of opinion, and opinions vary from culture to culture. So since they vary from culture to culture, whatever is right varies from culture to culture as well. Whatever is wrong varies from culture to culture as well. Now, we should be a little bit leery of this to begin with when we see one premise and one conclusion, if we know anything about argumentation theory, because you really almost never, as far as I can think, have a good conclusion coming, a supported conclusion coming from a single premise. So what that shows us, although Rachels doesn't really talk about this here, is there have to be some other supporting implicit premises that are being assumed, either on the part of the person making the argument or the person hearing the argument, in order for this to be viewed as a good argument. And Rachels points out that on its face, this is just a bad argument. Now, he uses the word unsound, which is technically not the right term to use in this. A unsound argument would be one whose structure was in fact valid, but the premises are false. In this case, the premise is true, but we're not sure if the conclusion actually is true, and it certainly doesn't seem to follow from the premise. So we call this kind of argument invalid. Why do we call it invalid? It's supposed to be a deductive argument. And just on the basis of its structure, the way inference is coming about, the premise doesn't necessarily lead to the conclusion. Notice Rachels says in this that the conclusion could be true, but the way this is set up, this does not provide us good reasons to think that the conclusion would be true because of the argument structure and evidence being provided. And he calls this the cultural differences argument. He says to many people it's persuasive, but it's not a good argument. So he gives us a counterexample. He says, consider the example of the Greeks and the Colossians. The Greeks believed it was wrong to eat the dead. The Colossians believed it was right. Does it follow from the mere fact that they disagreed that there is no objective truth in the matter? It doesn't follow, he says. It could be that one practice, in fact, was objectively right or wrong, and one was simply mistaken. Now, we would need some sort of frame of reference in order to say which one was objectively right or wrong. But here the relativist is going further and saying we can't possibly determine whether one of them is right or wrong, except within its own field. Rachels then invites us to think about a similar matter. He's drawing an analogy here. He says, in some societies, people believe the earth is flat. As a matter of fact, even within our Western, highly technological society, there is a flat earth society, and there are apparently more and more people belonging to this year after year. So even in our own complex Western, late modern society, there's some people who believe that the world is flat. He says, in other societies, such as our own, people believe that the earth is a sphere. By the way, just as a side note, the medievals did not think that the world was flat. You can see this by actually reading medieval thinkers like Anselm or Thomas Aquinas, who casually mentioned the globe of the earth, right? So now, how do you tell who's right or who's wrong about this? We don't have to worry about so much the decision procedure, but would you say that it's just a matter of opinion? Over here, they think the world is flat, and because they think it's flat, it is flat. Over here, they think the world is round, and because they think it's round, it is round. That doesn't work. And so he says, we wouldn't buy that. We would never draw such a conclusion because we realize the members of some societies might simply be wrong when it comes to geography. And he invites us to draw a similar conclusion when it comes to ethics or moral codes or practices that people buy into. This is not the strongest argument on its face that Rachels is making against cultural relativism here. But he is pointing something out, that if this is going to be a good argument, something more needs to be added to it, and it's not generally being added to it. Then he makes another very interesting counter-argument himself in the next section, what follows from cultural relativism. He says, well, let's pretend that cultural relativism is true. What would follow if it really was true? He says, here's the three consequences that would follow from this. One would be that we cannot say that the customs of other societies are in any way inferior to our own. Or rather, we're free to do so, but we're basically just asserting ourselves, and there is no validity to what we're actually saying. And there's no reason why they should listen to us or anybody else should listen to us. We're just babbling, essentially, so long as we're outside of our little sphere in what we're judging. Now, that could be problematic. He says that this is indeed one of the main points stressed by cultural relativism. So the cultural relativists say, yeah, exactly. So shut up about, you know, American or European or Western society, or pick whatever you have, being better than anyone else. If you're Chinese, quit saying Chinese society is better than anyone else. Now, he points out, if that's the case, we would also be barred from criticizing less benign practices. So he brings up Tiananmen Square. If we want to say that it's not okay to crush dissidents and send them into hiding for decades on end, or if we could think about other things going on more recently that we might condemn, this would mean that we couldn't condemn them. We could condemn things within our own society, but we couldn't condemn anything outside of our society. We'd have to say, well, that's just their norms. What else? We also can't criticize our own moral code if that's the case. So maybe we can't actually criticize anything within our society. He says, relativism suggests a simple test for determining what is right and what's wrong. All we need to do is ask whether the action is in line with the code of the society in question. So, you know, although the caste system has been long since legally banished in India, it still exists. It's actually such a problem that Britain recently had to enact laws for workplaces saying that you cannot discriminate in British companies and on British soil, you cannot discriminate on the basis of caste because it is such a pervasive part of culture. So he says, suppose a resident of India wonders whether the country's caste system is morally correct. All they have to do is ask whether this conforms to the society's moral code. And if that was the case, there never would have been any sort of getting rid of the caste system because it was part of the country's moral code. It goes all the way back to, you know, ancient religious texts and customs and all sorts of other developments. And we could think of many other things like that in our own Western society where nothing would ever have been changed. We would simply consult what are the norms and then we'd have to follow them. The mere fact that we can actually call the norms into question seems to be a problem for the cultural relativist position. The third issue, which is very interesting, is that if we accept cultural relativism, we can no longer talk in terms of progress or decline. We can talk about changes, but we can't say that anything actually constitutes getting better, as opposed to getting worse in terms of moral norms. So what would that preclude? That would mean, for example, that we would not be able to say that the civil rights struggle, on the whole, was a sign of moral progress, or certainly the civil rights legislation as well. We would not be able to say things like we ought to reform our prisons so that they're more humane because, you know, it's just our norms to treat prisoners badly for the most part here in America by comparison to, say, European countries. Or we could talk about drug legalization. Perhaps it's progress to legalize certain drugs, to decriminalize them. But we wouldn't be able to say that from the perspective that is afforded to us of cultural relativism. So here's the upshot of this. He says that these three consequences have led many people to reject it. Because cultural relativism implies that the judgments that we make would make no sense, cultural relativism itself must be wrong. There has to be something wrong with it. So there's an argument here for cultural relativism, and then there's Rachel's two attempts to rebut that argument by providing counter-arguments. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.